MyAudiobooks.ai presents The Vela Flash, the 1979 nuclear test mystery in the Southern Ocean. At approximately 53 minutes past midnight, Greenwich Mean Time, on September 22, 1979, an American surveillance satellite recorded an anomalous optical pulse over the far Southern Ocean. It was a sharp, rapid double flash of light emerging from the empty waters near the Prince Edward Islands. To defense analysts monitoring the telemetry in Washington, that specific pulse sequence carried an unmistakable meaning. It matched the physical signature of an atmospheric nuclear explosion.
The flash occurred thousands of miles from declared proving grounds, without warning and without any nation claiming responsibility. Decades later, that brief detection remains one of the atomic age's most contested scientific puzzles. Deciphering what happened requires answering two distinct questions. Did someone detonate a nuclear weapon in the subantarctic sea? And if so, who was responsible? At myaudiobooks.ai, you can create your own audiobooks from prompts, turn your documents into audio, all with one subscription, and store your items in your own personal library.
In 1963, the United States, the Soviet Union, and the United Kingdom signed the Limited Test Ban Treaty. The agreement prohibited nuclear weapons testing in the atmosphere, in outer space, and underwater. To ensure compliance, the United States developed the Vela satellite program, placing pairs of spherical observatories into high orbits roughly 65,000 miles above Earth. The primary optical instruments on these spacecraft were high-speed photodiode sensors, known as bang meters. These devices did not take visual photographs that could show a ship, an aircraft, or a testing crew. Instead, bang meters measured rapid fluctuations in optical brightness over fractions of a millisecond, recording subtle changes in light intensity over time.
An atmospheric nuclear explosion produces a distinctive optical signature known as a double flash. When a fission weapon detonates, the nuclear core releases intense bursts of X-rays that superheat the surrounding air. This process generates an incandescent fireball that radiates with blinding brightness. This initial spike marks the first flash, lasting only a fraction of a millisecond. Almost immediately, a violent hydrodynamic shockwave tears outward from the center of the blast. As the shock front compresses and ionizes the atmospheric gases, it turns momentarily opaque. This opaque ionization layer masks the radiant fireball expanding behind it. As a result, the light detected by orbital sensors plunges sharply, reaching an optical minimum.
As the shockwave continues to expand, it cools and sheds energy. Once the temperature of the shock front drops below roughly 3,000 degrees Celsius, the compressed air turns transparent again. The glowing fireball inside reemerges, casting a second, broader, and much longer pulse of light that gradually fades into the surrounding darkness. The ratio between these two peaks, along with the precise time interval separating them, directly reflects the explosive yield of the weapon. Across dozens of previous atmospheric tests, Vela bang meters had recorded this double pulse sequence with remarkable consistency.
On September 27, 1979, the detection came from satellite 6911. Launched in 1969 with an intended operational lifespan of 18 months, the spacecraft had survived a full decade in orbit. Its internal electronics were aging, its background noise levels were elevated, and only its optical sensors registered the event. While the recorded light curve closely matched the profile of a nuclear detonation, the degraded condition of an aging platform immediately complicated the scientific search for its origin.
Telemetry placed the optical event in the Southern Ocean, near the Prince Edward Islands, a remote subantarctic territory under South African jurisdiction, consisting of Marion Island and Prince Edward Island. That geographic position immediately focused international suspicion on the apartheid regime in Pretoria.
By the late 1970s, South Africa faced growing global isolation, an international arms embargo, and escalating military conflicts across southern Africa. In response, South African scientists established a clandestine uranium enrichment facility at Volondaba, adjacent to the Pelindaba Nuclear Research Complex. South Africa was secretly engineering gun-type fission weapons using highly enriched uranium. Years later, South African authorities confirmed that their scientists had assembled 6 deliverable nuclear devices. They dismantled the entire arsenal in the early 1990s, prior to joining the Nuclear Non-Proliferation Treaty.
Yet, in 1979, American intelligence analysts questioned whether South Africa possessed the technical ability to carry out an offshore atmospheric test without foreign assistance. The complex logistics of deploying a nuclear weapon from a maritime platform in turbulent sub-Antarctic waters appeared to exceed the country's recognized naval capabilities. Suspicion quickly broadened toward Israel. For decades, Israel had maintained a policy of deliberate nuclear opacity, neither confirming nor denying the possession of atomic weapons, while quietly operating the Dimona reactor complex in the Negev Desert. Facing shared geopolitical isolation, Israel and South Africa had established extensive security cooperation throughout the 1970s.
Declassified records, including archival documentation uncovered by diplomatic historians, revealed significant exchanges of strategic materials between the two nations. South Africa supplied Israel with uranium yellowcake concentrate. In return, Israel provided advanced missile engineering, specialized defense hardware, and tritium, a radioactive hydrogen isotope used to boost fission yields.
This documented collaboration made two working scenarios plausible. An independent Israeli test conducted in remote southern waters with South African logistical support, or a coordinated joint operation. The possibility of an undeclared nuclear detonation presented Washington with an immediate strategic crisis. Policymakers found themselves dependent on whether independent sensor networks could corroborate the satellite's solitary flash.
President Jimmy Carter had placed international nuclear non-proliferation at the center of his foreign policy agenda, and a clandestine test in the Southern Hemisphere threatened American diplomatic credibility. Under the Nuclear Non-Proliferation Act of 1978, a confirmed nuclear explosion by a non-nuclear state triggered mandatory economic and military sanctions.
The Carter administration directed an exhaustive search across all available global monitoring networks. Analysts reviewed regional seismic recordings to detect ground shockwaves, but listening stations recorded no seismic disturbances. Ocean monitoring stations searched underwater sound recordings, yet these produced no immediate consensus. The United States Air Force dispatched specialized reconnaissance aircraft across the Southern Ocean to collect atmospheric particulate samples, but their air filters failed to trap unmistakable fission fragments.
To resolve the contradictory evidence, the White House Office of Science and Technology Policy convened an independent scientific panel. It was chaired by Jack Ruina, an electrical engineering professor at the Massachusetts Institute of Technology and former director of the Advanced Research Projects Agency. The panel gathered prominent physical scientists, including the physicist Richard Garwin.
Released in the summer of 1980, the Ruina panel's public report concluded that the signal was probably not from a nuclear explosion. The panel concentrated on instrumental anomalies aboard satellite 6911. The spacecraft carried 2 separate bang meters, but their telemetry displayed minor differences in pulse amplitude and wave shape. Furthermore, the satellite's secondary radiation instruments and radio frequency sensors registered no activity at the moment of the flash.
The Ruina panel proposed an alternative physical explanation. A tiny micrometeoroid could have collided with the spacecraft, dislodging a small particle of reflective thermal paint or insulating debris. If that dislodged fleck drifted across the narrow field of view of a single optical sensor while tumbling in sunlight, its rotation could reflect an initial glint. a subsequent broader reflection could then mimic a double flash. Satellite technicians categorized such rare instrumental anomalies as zoo events. The Rowena panel's conclusion provided the administration with a way to avoid an immediate foreign policy confrontation. But within the intelligence and defense communities, the finding remained intensely controversial.
The Rowena panel's non-nuclear interpretation met direct resistance from government intelligence analysts and laboratory scientists. The Central Intelligence Agency assembled its own panel of specialists. They determined that the optical recording was entirely consistent with a low-yield atmospheric nuclear detonation of 2 to 3 kilotons. Technical analysts at the Defense Intelligence Agency, along with weapons researchers at Los Alamos and Lawrence Livermore National Laboratories, reached similar conclusions.
Scientists at the United States Naval Research Laboratory conducted an extensive investigation into underwater acoustics. They identified hydroacoustic signals recorded by listening stations near Ascension Island and across missile range monitoring arrays. These sound waves had traveled through the ocean's deep sound channel, known as the SOFAR channel, which allows low-frequency acoustic energy to propagate across thousands of miles. The detected sound waves traced back to an acoustic source near the Prince Edward Islands at the exact minute of the satellite detection. The acoustic profile matched an explosion at or just above the water's surface.
Decades later, independent peer-reviewed studies published in the technical journals Science and Global Security systematically dismantled the micrometeoroid hypothesis. Physicists modeled the mechanical structure of the Vela satellite and evaluated the physics of hypervelocity particle impacts. They demonstrated that debris dislodged by a micrometeoroid strike travels away from the satellite body at high velocity, exiting the sensor's narrow field of view within microseconds. A reflective paint fleck would have had to follow an extraordinarily precise path, speed, and tumbling motion to duplicate both the timing and intensity ratio of a nuclear explosion. Physicists calculated that probability to be vanishingly small.
Environmental data also underwent critical re-examination. In October 1979, trace amounts of radioactive iodine-131 were detected in the thyroid glands of sheep slaughtered in southeastern Australia. Atmospheric trajectory modeling established that prevailing wind currents across the Southern Ocean could have transported an airborne radioactive plume from the Prince Edward Islands to Australia within that exact time frame. Because iodine-131 has a radioactive half-life of only 8 days, its presence indicated recent nuclear fission. However, critics contended that such low concentrations could have originated from commercial medical isotopes or reactor emissions.
Historical memoirs added further weight to the nuclear interpretation. Former CIA Director Stansfield Turner later noted his personal belief that the event was an Israeli test. Nevertheless, exhaustive examinations of declassified South African military and diplomatic archives produced no testing authorization, countdown logs, or joint operational orders. While subsequent physical analyses reinforced the likelihood of a nuclear explosion, they did not yield definitive archival evidence identifying the state responsible.
The enduring ambiguity surrounding the September 1979 flash served concrete diplomatic interests. In late 1979, the Carter administration was steering the fragile implementation of the Camp David Accords between Israel and Egypt. At the same time, officials were working to secure Senate ratification of the Strategic Arms Limitation Talks II treaty with the Soviet Union.
A formal attribution blaming Israel would have triggered mandatory legal sanctions under the Symington and Glenn Amendments. That outcome would have forced an immediate cutoff of American economic and military assistance to Israel, potentially destabilizing Middle Eastern diplomacy. Similarly, an official accusation directed at South Africa would have ruptured delicate international negotiations concerning the independence of Namibia and Southern African security. The Rowena panel's finding of an instrumental anomaly allowed policymakers to avoid triggering mandatory statutory sanctions and avert an open non-proliferation crisis.
The Vela incident demonstrated the profound risk of depending on a single isolated detection platform. When an aging sensor records an unexpected signal in a remote environment, technical uncertainty can easily align with strategic convenience.
To prevent such ambiguity today, international monitoring relies on a dense, multi-layered verification infrastructure. The International Monitoring System, established under the Comprehensive Nuclear Test Ban Treaty Organization, operates 321 monitoring facilities distributed across the planet. The network integrates four complementary physical technologies. Seismic sensors detect underground shockwaves, while hydroacoustic arrays monitor oceanic pressure waves. Infrasound microbarometers track low-frequency atmospheric disturbances, and radionuclide stations detect microscopic radioactive debris. A similar physical disturbance today would face immediate cross-examination across multiple sensor networks simultaneously.
Resolving the legacy of the Vela incident requires dividing the investigation into three separate questions. First, did Satellite 6911 detect an authentic physical signal? The satellite telemetry confirms that its optical sensors registered a distinctive double flash. Second, was that signal caused by a nuclear explosion? While the official 1980 White House report attributed the reading to an instrumental anomaly, subsequent optical and hydroacoustic analyses make a low-yield nuclear detonation the most coherent technical explanation.
Third, who conducted the test? On that point, the public record remains inconclusive. Intelligence assessments, diplomatic patterns, and documented military cooperation continue to point toward Israel, South Africa, or a collaborative venture, but conclusive proof remains locked within classified state archives. When technical signals intersect with sensitive geopolitical interests, enduring ambiguity is often the result. If this investigation changed how you view orbital surveillance and Cold War history, consider a final question. When an event leaves measurable physical traces, but lacks an official paper trail, what level of evidence is required to finally close the historical record?
Thanks for watching. To create your own audiobooks from your prompts and documents, visit myaudiobooks.ai. Subscribe for more.